everybody knows the statement that assumptions make fools, I'll say, of you and me. To assume is to make a fool of you and me. That's not necessarily true. So today I'm going to talk about us starting with one basic assumption. And maybe we can examine it during the course of this talk. Here is that one basic assumption about life. We have been designed to grow. We have been designed to grow. And I'm thinking, if our Creator is capable of designing existence, that Creator is capable of designing creations that can grow. And when I assume that to be true, then I can further assume that the necessary ingredients for growth are provided too. I mean, it doesn't make any sense that there would be the creation of something to grow and then there are no means to do that, no ingredients that are provided for that growth. That would be a very short cycle. If a sperm has a consciousness that's aligned with growth, you know that that sperm has got to fertilize an ovum. And if an ovum has some sort of consciousness desiring growth, then you know that it's got to be fertilized by a sperm. And so you can just say, I'm starting to see a pattern here. And we know that a fertilized ovum grows, and it grows, and it grows to become a member of whatever species it is that we're talking about. A human baby, a baby elephant, a puppy, a kitten, and so on. When those two ingredients, both propelled by a desire to grow, sperm and an ovum, connect, then all kinds of fantastic miracle-type growth can occur. I don't think anybody can deny that growth is natural and it's normal to life. I mean, in fact, growth is how we distinguish life from, say, looking at a rock. So I think this assumption that we have been designed to grow really starts to hold up to scrutiny as we look at it. As we grow physically, we're going to approach a time when it becomes apparent that we need to become separate individuals. And for human beings, we generally expect this time period to be at the end of 9 months, that a child is now ready, is going to give an indication to mother through contractions that it's time for me to change my habitat. I need a new place to live because this one has gotten a little too small for me. And we see that after that planting of the seed 9 months earlier, that starts this growth cycle that the baby is ready to individuate from the mother. Now, it takes longer for elephants and other species, shorter periods of time, but the same process holds true. One of the differences, though, when a human baby is born after, say, 9 months in utero, it may be ready to individuate, but it is not really time or ready to be an individual completely self-sustaining on its own. Because human babies require a tremendous amount of care after they're born. And so they can't stand, they can't feed themselves. They've got to grow physically in a lot of different ways. So what we do with a brand new human baby is we feed that baby liquids. The ideal scene, of course, is mother's milk. But through marketing efforts and so on, liquid formulas are popularized. And then the baby is going to grow physically in order to be able to eat solid foods. And first, those things are going to be pureed, right? The baby has no teeth. They haven't grown teeth yet. And so pureed foods, carrots and peas and all the rest of that stuff that we've fed them from jars, or if we were more, I'll say, conscientious, I'm frankly not familiar with that part, is to puree, you know, organic vegetables and so on to be able to feed to the baby. And so then the baby is going to grow teeth and the food becomes more and more solid. Over this time, that baby has got to grow to be able to communicate its needs, which it has that ability very early on with, you know, screaming or crying or gurgling or something, so to indicate comfort or discomfort. It's going to learn how to use its hands, maybe to pick something up and stick it in its mouth, or use its arms, or ultimately stand up on its legs and then to be able to take the first step. In other words, that baby has got to grow in size and strength and skills of moving and using its body. We think that's all normal. I'm thinking, though, with all that early emphasis on the body, it becomes easy to understand how overemphasis on the physical occurs as we continue to grow. That baby is physical, 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 physical. And if a parent is more aware of its mental and emotional needs, then there's a different thing going on. But by and large, most people are looking at that baby, and this has been true for years when the medical profession didn't appreciate the fact that when a baby is being born, it's experiencing pain. They just ignored that possibility entirely. No, it can't be. But now we recognize that baby is processing information very early on through its life in utero. It's processing information, and certainly before, during, and at the birth experience, and then throughout the rest of its days as a human being. That's part of growth, is processing environmental signals. I usually have a small container of cottage cheese for breakfast. And the other days, it struck me, and I was talking to my puppy, Nikki. She's not really a puppy, she's 9.5 years old, but she's 11, 12 pounds, so she's a puppy as far as I'm concerned, because she's small. I was telling her how much I love the cottage cheese, and Nikki was paying attention, as she always does when there's food around, particularly cottage cheese, because she knows that she's going to get the last couple of spoonsful. And I thought, and I actually spoke this, about how loving a creator we have who would design a cow to eat the grass, to produce the milk that is going to be turned into cottage cheese. I was like, wow, that's amazing. That's amazing to have my growth, because cottage cheese, high protein, good thing, good for you, sort of thing, being provided for me by design. And then I laughed, and I thought, it certainly saves me the trouble of learning how to get on my hands and knees, eat grass, and digest it. The digesting grass is not what our stomachs are really designed for. And in fact, cows have two stomachs to make it easier for them to digest the grass. So I guess it must not be that easy to do. But the fact that I don't have to do it, and the cow will do it for me by design, I thought, how thoughtful of our Creator. Now, you and I would both recognize with about a nanosecond of thought that the Creator did not stop providing for our growth the minute we were born. Or in a case like this, has not stopped providing for our growth, and the only example of that being the grass, cow, cottage cheese equation. Those are not the only two experiences of being provided for in terms of growth. They are abundant. Growth opportunities are abundant. Do you remember this kind of tongue-in-cheek, ironic kind of a cliche when, like in a work situation where some problem had occurred and somebody else would say, oh, this is a growth opportunity for you. And we could look at that and go, that was a joke. Actually, I think that cliche is true. Challenges are growth opportunities. Whether we recognize them or not, that's a whole different ballgame, but they are, in fact, opportunities to grow. Now, I know how, and I'm sure you know how, to grow muscles and strength, and we can do that easily by going to the gym. Even in just a couple of days, we can grow muscles and strength in a gym. And the way we would do that is we would challenge our muscles by deliberately using resistance of weights or other machines like Stairmasters and climbers and treadmills and so on. We would deliberately put a challenge in front of us, adding resistance, making it more difficult, and we recognize that our bodies, our muscles will grow in order to meet that challenge. So challenges do inspire and spur growth. Now, you say that, about the gym and people who understand the gift of growth in that process of, using resistance to grow. There's people that appreciate and they can use the gym to grow healthier bodies. But people who don't understand that challenges can lead to growth are basically going to avoid the gym and perhaps even avoid other challenges. In Letter 2 of Christ's Returns Reveals Startling Truth, pages 92 and 93, Christ is explaining his experience of, this is during his ministry, this is, he's already achieved Christhood, he already had the baptism with John in the river, and so now he is looking to meditate and to increase his awareness, and he does, and he describes it, and I'm going to read these couple of pages to you. I knew that wherever there was lacked, there would eventually be fulfillment, even as waters flow to fill the lake. Where there is misery, there would be joy, because it was the nature of the universal to move into any living thing in need to bring fulfillment and joy. I knew that where there was no growth, circumstances would arise to promote the growth. I knew that where there was a sense of failure, challenges would be provided to spur people into success and self-confidence. I saw that this love work constantly, initiated by the Father in the lives of overburdened people, might not be recognized as a gift of love by the recipients. They might be so sunk in their apathy, feelings of failure, their belief that nothing good could ever come their way, they would fail to see anything in their lives beyond their own beliefs and feelings, hence they would remain rooted in their own self-created hell. There was no need to feel sorry for anyone. The only need was a compassionate heart and a determination to bring truth to heal their ignorance. The greatest gift a man could give to another was the enlightenment of ignorance of existence and its cosmic laws, for the truth was, every single soul was embraced within universal, and the degree of universal input via the Father love work in their lives depended entirely on the individual's receptivity. I realized that what people needed urgently to hear was what I had just been told. They needed to see and fully realize the intention and the purpose and the potential of love, which was the very substance of their being. Because of their disbelief, they might cast the Father love work aside as being more pain-inducing challenges, and thus lie down in their failure forever. I now saw, even more clearly, I was sent to awaken people to all the possibilities for self-development, prosperity, and the achievement of joy and happiness, but it would be up to them to wake up and take advantage of what was offered them. I love that. We would be amazed if we went to the gym and stood outside or went inside and took up a bench, and we watch people go into the gym every day and then start complaining about how heavy the weights were, how sweaty they would get if they used them, how hard they would have to breathe as they exercised, etc. And then not do any exercises, in fact, just get up and leave without taking advantage of that. We'd shake our heads, right? Because we would know that they missed a growth opportunity. And those opportunities could have benefited them tremendously, but not appreciating that opportunity that was right in front of them, they turned around and missed it entirely. That's just what Jesus was talking about, some people missing that opportunity entirely. On the other hand, outside of the gym, we can hear people, sometimes even ourselves, who are complaining about the life, work, traffic, weather, other people, to include our spouses or children or neighbors or friends and other people. And all of us who don't realize that we are in the, quotes, gym of life, end quotes, where growth opportunities are abundant. We all seem to think at some point, maybe more regularly than others, that we want things to be easier. But look around. Is that really true? I don't really think so. Nobody climbs a mountain because they want it easy. If they wanted it easy, they'd stay home sitting on a couch. They climb the mountain because they want to grow their awareness of what they're capable of. They want to have that set of experiences that are involved in that process and grow their knowingness about it. Nobody writes a book because they want it easier. If they wanted it easier, they would go to sleep. Lay down in bed and go to sleep. That's easier. They write a book to grow their identity, their skills, their awareness, their public images, their abilities, their financial net worth, make a contribution, to the world. A lot of different reasons why people would write a book. When we lack the understanding that an opportunity for growth is present, basically, we're going to either ignore it or resist it because we don't recognize its value. We'll just overlook it. And if we're going to resist it, then we're going to fight that opportunity because we don't see it as an opportunity. In fact, we see it as something that maybe is going to diminish us, make us feel worse about ourselves, require us to breathe heavy, require us to sweat, require our energy, require our focus, mental or emotional or physical focus. And so we're either going to fight it or we're going to run away from it. We're going to criticize it. We're going to reject it. The trouble is, there's the end result of rejecting growth, and it's fairly easy to imagine. As we reject growth, then lower vibrations start to manifest. They start to multiply, and they start to show up in our lives as unhappiness, lack of joy. And as we keep practicing those lower vibrations of rejecting growth opportunities, you can start to see it as the beginning of illness or disease. And then finally, if we don't wake up and change the direction, we're going to experience that as physical death. My opinion is, if we're not growing, we're dying. If you had to boil it down into two separate concepts, growing or dying, I think that's a valid idea. If we're not expanding our awareness, we're then withdrawing it, retracting it, pulling it back in. We're diminishing our awareness, our consciousness. That is not an indication of growth. And we start pulling out of the body. We're reducing our presence in physicality. Now, all of a sudden, we're really at a disadvantage. I think the only reason that we would make the choice to not grow is because we're not aware that no matter what, we can grow. Some people have experiences of failure and go, oh, I can't possibly grow. You know, I remember failing years and years ago, or even days ago, or months ago, or years. That has nothing to do with anything. This is a new unit of time, and we can make a different choice. And this is what Christ was saying in that information that I read a few minutes ago. The past doesn't really matter. It's what you do from this moment on. It is the choice of thoughts that we have available to us, and we choose them. And the person that's going to choose non-growth has got thoughts of pain associated with trying to reach in that direction to try to expand. But I'm thinking that is not really true in terms of their mental expansion or their spiritual expansion or their emotional expansion or growth. It may be when we put our hand in a cookie jar, that's a physical activity, and we may have caught hell for it, you know, punishment or whatever, and other similar experiences, even as adults, the cookie jars become different, and now it causes us to retreat from life, and retreating from life, that constant retreat is going in the opposite direction of growth. Earlier I tried to identify who said this statement, because this person is clearly a believer in a lie and a believer in scarcity. Opportunity only knocks once. That's not true. Opportunities abound. There are lots of them. Consider this. Opportunities for our growth are among the most abundant things in life. If you looked around and said, this is an opportunity for growth. If you thought of your neighbor and this is an opportunity for growth. If you looked at your lawn and said, this is an opportunity for growth. If you thought of a piece of paper and a pen and you wanted to write something and you thought of this as an opportunity for growth. Or if you just looked at flowers or birds or a puppy or your spouse and looked at that as an opportunity for growth, we would be having a whole different set of experiences. If we could get that truth about growth opportunities, all of a sudden, we would be able to burn away these filters of fear and rejection that tell us that things are, you know, that we see are negative. We would be able to burn that away. That's a tendency to to react to anything new, any change as a potential threat. That's a survival thing. I think that comes with having a physical body and that we've inherited from, you know, how many generations of our ancestors. But if we can turn around and go, wait a minute, I know I'm going to have this little blip of initially of fear or rejection of this, but it really represents growth. Let me see if I can expand my awareness, my spiritual connection, my mental connection, my emotional connection, and my physical connection to whatever it is I happen to be thinking about. Then the gifts of growth are going to be waiting to be unwrapped by us. And we use our growing awareness and understanding in order to unwrap those gifts, to be able to discover that. Unwrapping these gifts is, to me, a fantastic growth opportunity. I was thinking about the first person to discover a pearl inside of an oyster. And it makes sense to me that that person did not know there was a pearl inside of the oyster. How could he know if he's the first person? So he or she is like, you know what? You know what? I want to grow to understand what's inside of this oyster. And so they find an oyster, they open it, and that is no easy undertaking, folks. If you haven't ever tried to open an oyster, you go, ooh, that thing wants to stay closed. Yeah, it does. And so they grew an awareness of how to open it. And then they look inside of an oyster, and I don't know about you, but I'm looking at it inside of an oyster. I go, that's pretty ugly. That's gushy. That's yucky. That's not, I wouldn't call that beauty in any stretch of the imagination. But they continued searching, they continued growing, seeking more understanding, and they dug around in the meat of the oyster, and hello, lo and behold, he or she found a beautiful pearl. And you go, yeah, I'm thinking that must have happened. That's how it happened the first time. And for subsequent adventurers that went looking for pearls had to go through that same process, but now with a greater degree of faith or knowingness, because so-and-so told them that, in fact, they had found a pearl inside of an oyster. I hear from clients they have oftentimes achieved that same sort of an awareness, and I hear about this. It's a frequent realization and acknowledgement that a difficult disease or a life situation, you know, career or family or financial, has led them to wonderful spiritual growth. Now, this idea that they, and then they go on to say, you know what? This problem, this challenge has been a tremendous blessing in that they wouldn't have gone onto this spiritual path without the impetus of illness or, some sort of a catastrophe. To be able to look at a trauma or a tragedy like an oyster, and to be able to go deeply into it to discover the pearl, is really a great opportunity that we have. Now, on the other hand, some people would say, oh, wait a minute, you know, that's God is just trying to teach us or punish us. God's trying to teach us a lesson, by causing trauma or tragedy. I disagree with that completely. I think we as human beings are sometimes so unawake, so unaware, that it takes a very big alarm clock to get us out of this unaware, unawake state. I think that opportunities have different sounds and different appearances. So visualize this. This is what I'm thinking of. A person is driving down the highway. I live not so far away from Interstate 75, so it's pretty much three lanes in both directions. So driving down the highway, and that person, if they're aware, can notice that the lines that separate lane 1 from lane 2 and lane 3, there are lines that separate that. There are signals. So those signals really are an opportunity for them to know where the lane is and to help them be aware of how to stay within those lines. And you go, okay, I understand that. That's fairly common. So these lines really are helping our awareness grow as to where to drive our car, what direction we want to have with our cars. Sometimes you've been on a road, for instance, where it's newly paved and there are no lines on it. It's like, two-lane road. They got a lane on the other side of the road is coming at me, and I can't tell where the dividing line is because nobody marked it. But in this case, on this highway, those lines are there. However, if we don't take advantage of that opportunity to notice which lane we're in, we may notice that our tires are now hitting those little teeny dividers, you know, the little round things that separate the lanes, designed to help people if they fall asleep or they're not paying attention, talking on a cell phone, for instance, or doing something else in a car other than focusing on driving. Now all of a sudden, thunk, 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 thunk. It's like, oh, you know, wow. That is really designed to grow our awareness that we are now changing lanes. Now, if we're doing it intentionally, no big deal. But if we're doing it unintentionally, that's a nice wake-up call. That alarm clock is not that loud, but it's very, very helpful. And, however, if our awareness doesn't grow, say we have fallen asleep and we don't hear that thunk, 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 then guess what? The next wake-up call is going to be in the form of, ideally, guardrails off to the side of the road. And that's the next growth opportunity to bring us out of our state of unawareness. Better that than hitting another car. How could we make God responsible for us not growing our driving skills and causing us to hit a guardrail, right? I mean, that would be weird. This is a weird conclusion. God created my refusal to grow in awareness, so I didn't notice I was leaving my lane. I didn't notice that my tires were going thump, 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 thump. And then I hit the guardrail, and God did that to teach me a lesson. To me, that's ridiculous, and it's superstitious. Like, we might want to take some of that responsibility. If the one basic assumption, we are designed to grow, is true, can we find evidence of this? Well, obviously, I talk about the sperm and ovum. That's pretty real. And it's like, oh, yeah, I think that's true. It grew. It grew. I'm larger than that now. That's for sure. And so we can look, though, in other areas of our lives, not just in the physical, about this growth. And I know, and I'm sure you do, too, other people who have turned trauma and tragedy into treasure. And this is the way they did it. They did it by growing their awareness, seeing it as an opportunity to grow their awareness, to look deeper and deeper into it. And they looked long enough and deep enough in order to discover that pearl or diamond in their experience. They were looking for good. They were looking for a blessing, and they continued until they found it. They didn't stop looking at the outer shell of it that may have the appearance of an oyster. Ugh, this is ugly, it's not pretty, it's messy, it's yeah, yeah, yeah. But they continued to go deeper, trying to grow their awareness, to recognize the truth that their divine creator was, in fact, providing all this great stuff that they have been told occasionally as children, or they can know now as adults. I recognize with myself that, and I recognize this idea that opportunities have different sounds and appearances. We don't have to wait until opportunity comes at us in the form of a 2x4 or a guardrail. We can hear it or feel it or see it or know it way before we get hit in the head, way before that. And we don't have to wait for that illness, that catastrophe to strike, that loss to strike. We can find it much earlier in this process. I'm thinking that people that are the most successful and have the most pleasant lives and who have the most growth are the ones who can hear opportunities for growth when it's only a whisper. It doesn't need to be a shout for some people to hear it, but they're paying attention. They are aware. They know what they're listening for or looking for or feeling for. They're the ones who see growth opportunities in their imaginations way before something is solid, way before it shows up in physical manifestation. It doesn't have to be a solid object for some people to see an opportunity. They can perceive it. They're aware of it when it's still in this really, really fine form of an invisible, energetic thought form. My wife, Marianne, is an owner of a winery in Northern California, in Sonoma. She told me that it is a tough soil, and that it's a tough environment for vines there. The climate, hot in the day, cold at night, dry, and the soil is really rocky, and water is not plentiful. And in that environment, a vine can grow up to 200 feet deep, searching for life-giving water. A vine can grow 200 feet deep into the soil, searching for life-giving water. Now, here are two reactions to that situation that I'm going to make up. Here's the first one. Oh, you poor vine. Your roots have to grow and work so hard to grow. Oh, no, wow, that's just not right. That's so unfair. I'm going to complain and whine, pun intended, for you. Right? That's one point of view, to look at it like that. Or here's another point of view. Isn't it amazing that a grapevine has been designed by the Creator to have the consciousness, the intelligence, to be able to grow to extraordinary lengths in order to thrive? It knows enough to grow toward this life-giving force. For a vine, I'm talking about water, but this life-giving force for us would be, spiritual. How about that? I used to live in San Diego, and years ago I helped a couple of families deal with the deaths of their children. Their kids, in both cases, were 16-year-old girls in different places. They didn't know one another, died in automobile accidents. In both cases, the parents recognized, with a little bit of help, a lot of help from the deceased daughters, through automatic writing, that the deaths were actually gifts from the daughters to their families in order to put them on the spiritual path so they could achieve and be aligned with spiritual growth. You may say that's remarkable, but I've watched the transformation of families as a result of this awareness that this is really what it was all about. The deceased child was happy, healthy, and just in a wonderful state, in a wonderful dimension or plane of existence, and that this was part of the deal, part of the agreement that they had. What's to prevent us from being able to experience an illness or a disease right now and using it, translating it into a bump in the road to alert us to change our direction so that we can take a path of greater spiritual understanding? A greater understanding of what the divine is offering us. I've had experiences with friends and one relative of where paralysis resulting from a diving accident at 14 was turned into a blessing. It was turned into a tremendous gift, and it continues to be a gift to this day, some 45 years later. That, you would say, is pretty remarkable. And a person who was raped in prison, a man, who turned it into a blessing because it helped him receive awareness of compassion for himself, for the perpetrator, and for other people in his life. It was a totally life-changing experience. Both of these people grew enormously. Now you could say, wow, I'd like to grow enormously, but without having those experiences. I think we can do that. We don't need to hit the guardrail before we wake up and go, you know what? I need to grow spiritually. I think we can do that and to be able to align with that early on. If we're experienced right now, besides physical problems or career problems or family problems, let's say we're experiencing financial challenges, we can still use that to grow our spiritual awareness of really where value, where energy comes from. Money is just energy. And to be able to get into this flow, why not go to the headwaters of energy flow, divine consciousness, God, spirit, however you would want to phrase that. I like the idea that the divine consciousness is eager to provide us with the ingredients listed according to Christ in the truth of existence. Here, these are available abundantly to you and to me. Growth, nutrition and nourishment, healing, protection, fulfillment of need, work, survival, rhythm, all within a system of spiritual law and order. Now, if we could grow our spiritual awareness to be able to connect to each one of those items, you think our lives could be different? You think we could stop all the struggling and the pain and the hurt and the illness and the lower vibrations of shame or apathy or grief or fear or lust or anger or pride? I'm thinking we could. We could walk up to that buffet table set by the divine, but the only way we can do that is to grow in our awareness. There's only one reason, I think, that we wouldn't do that. It's because this human consciousness, this ego mind, is telling us to navigate our vehicles in different directions than the one that's going to lead to health and happiness, prosperity and love. And when we listen to this bad advice, right, then we think we got to do it. We got to do it. It's part of being an individual. You know, we crash into walls. We're going to miss these very easy growth opportunities, and we're going to be crashing into the guardrails of life. For many of us, we're going to use that, and we need that in order to wake up enough to start to grow. But we have another choice. We can do it much more easily than that. We don't have to go through all of that stuff. It doesn't have to be that difficult. If we set our intention on developing the skill to see life as a continuing series of opportunities for growth, then we might know, happiness, health, success, by understanding and experiencing the divine behind and within all creation. Whatever we look at, whatever we want to do, if we could see it as a growth opportunity and then be willing to grow in that direction, we're talking about something significantly life-changing right there. I'm no Christ, but I do aspire to have Christ consciousness and to know and to be able to heal like Jesus did. But I'm going to reread that last paragraph from page 93, but I'm going to make it about you and me. I now saw even more clearly that you and I were sent to awaken people, starting with you and me ourselves, to all the possibilities for self-development, prosperity, and achievement of joy and happiness. But it would be up to us first to wake up and take advantage of what was offered to us. It's like, yep. I don't want to fix anybody else. I want to fix me. And by being healed, by being more aware, by growing spiritually, then that model will trigger the desire for growth in other people. And that was the model that Christ has set for us. It's like, hey, I can do it. You can do it too. And even more things. That's real encouraging if we see life as opportunities for growth, which I think is more than just an assumption. I'd like to end this service with a prayer. This is from Letter 8 of Christ Returns, Reveal Startling Truth. I've pluralized it for you and me. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know that it is your will that we should be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, and as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.